Hello and welcome to Spiritually Hungry. Today we have Laura Lynn Jackson joining us. She is a medium, a psychic, a clairvoyant, among many other things. She is a New York Times bestseller author. She's written the book The Light Between Us and Signs. Highly recommend them. Join us for this very interesting conversation where we can all tap into our own innate power, intuitive ability, and be able to reach out to those who have even passed. Welcome, Laura. We're so excited to talk with you today. I'm going to jump right in. I was so intrigued by what you do, and I really want to start with kind of breaking it down because there's a lot of different interpretations, understandings, skeptics, even on some of the abilities which you carry. And I think that a great place to start is kind of defining them. So you have written that I am not a prophet or an oracle. I am a conduit. So can you explain the difference between being a psychic versus a medium? And then also I'd like you to touch upon the difference between being clairvoyant, clairaudient, and clairsentient.
Okay, sure. I think that's a really great place to start. So thank you for asking me to explain those things. There's a saying in, you know, amongst my peers that all mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are mediums. And what that's really referring to is the different abilities that I think we all possess, but we maybe close down to certain ones, or we don't open or develop certain ones to the extent that we could. So being psychic refers to the fact that we're able to tune into unseen energy fields. For example, each and every one of us has an aura. You know, in the New Age community, it's called an aura. Scientists call it a biofield, but it's very real and it extends outside of your body. You know, we're all electric beings. Our hearts are electric. We live in this world where there are electromagnetic fields. And I think we fail to recognize that the only truth of our existence is that everything is energy and we are energy. And so being psychic means you have an awareness of that and that you're able to tune into that energy field. And when I read psychically, basically what I'll do is I'll connect with somebody's energy field and I don't need to be physically near them. You know, I can just kind of tune into their frequency, so to speak. And within that energy field is all sorts of information. There's information about a person's past, a person's present, a person's future. I will also be able to follow these kinds of cords of light, of connection between the person I'm reading for, which is often referred to as the sitter, and people they're connected to in the here and now. And so I'll follow this kind of cord of light connection, and then I'll be able to read someone else's energy that they're connected to off of them, so to speak. So we're very influenced by the people we spend time with. And I think understanding unseen energy and understanding that truth can really help us be very much more respectful to our own light energy, our own auras, and also help guide us to pull maybe towards people who inspire us and who we're excited to be around, and maybe help us avoid or lessen the time we have with people who drain us, you know, sometimes are referred to as energy vampires. Reading mediumistically is a very different ability. I always feel that it's really the highest form of being open to your abilities that you come here with. And I will define in a moment the four clairs that I always say is our psychic toolbox. But just to give you a brief definition of mediumship is basically the idea that our consciousness does not come from our physical brains. Our physical brains are more like a dunce cap that kind of keep us from remembering that our true home is on the other side and that we're all part of the same whole. You know, we're all different leaves on different branches of the same tree. And that when we are done with our linear time here on Earth school, and we're really here on Earth to learn a collective lesson in love, any opportunity we have to give love or receive love, that's why we're here. But we transition out of our physical bodies. We're spiritual beings. We are souls. It's not that our bodies have souls. And so when we leave our physical bodies, our consciousness is very much intact and we're able to see in all new directions. You know, our physical eyes are very limiting. When we leave our physical body, we have that kind of clairvoyant vision, which I'll define in a moment, but it's the ability to see without using your physical eyes. And we can also communicate through this thought energy. When I read mediumistically, I receive information. When I read psychically, I'm reaching out and I'm kind of retrieving information from an auric field. But reading mediumistically, I sit back and I receive information from the other side. And for me, it's very clear because I get all my information on an inner screen, and all my psychic information comes from my left, and all my mediumship comes from my right. And when somebody's going to communicate with me mediumistically, I'll see a point of light push into my screen, and that's how I'll know there's energy coming to communicate with me. I'm also able to communicate with people who never spoke English. And that's because when I am connecting and I am receiving information, it's really not in English. It's in this very rapid emotional language that I'll then translate into English. And it's very multisensory. And so I'll be seeing, hearing things, almost seeing like little movie clips in my mind sometimes. And the other side will use all my psychic abilities, all the clairs, in order to give me information. So let me define what those are. You mentioned three of them. There's actually a fourth I like to talk about too. So I'm going to go one by one. The first is clairvoyance, and that means clear seeing. And it's the idea that I think we can all understand. For example, when we sleep at night and we dream and we're vividly seeing, and yet our physical eyes are closed. That's our psychic vision. That's our clairvoyant vision. And for most people, I think it tends to come out in the sleep state, less in the waking state. For me, when I do readings and my screen appears and I start seeing all sorts of things on it, that's a form of clairvoyance. And I'm doing it in my waking hours. I seem to know where the switch in my brain is to do that. That's what scientists have mapped in my brain. And we can talk about that more later. There's a lot, it's very interesting what EEGs of my brain have shown. But when we all sleep and our frontal lobes, it starts about here, goes to about here. It's what meditation teachers call your monkey mind that chatters all the time. Well, that's where we spend 98% of our brainwave activity during our waking hours. And so that limits us from accessing other parts of our brains, what's known as the more psychic parts, so to speak, the ones that are connected to our soul and to the other side and to, unseen energy and feeling that energy. But when we sleep, the monkey mind goes offline. And so that's why a lot of people will have dream visitations from loved ones who have crossed. A lot of times people will have precognitive dreams that are usually very symbolic in nature, but will guide them on their path, whether it's letting them know something that's going to occur or helping them figure out the highest and best path for them to take with a situation or a career change or a relationship or whatever it might be. But that's what clairvoyance is. The next one is clairaudience, and that means clear hearing. That one's pretty rare, but it does happen. All of us have an inner narrative going on at all times. It's called a subtext. It's a story we're telling ourselves about our own lives and what we're doing. But every now and then you'll notice that instead of a thought coming from you, a thought will come to you. Sometimes it's in the voice of a loved one. Sometimes it just comes in as a thought, but there's an awareness there that that didn't come generated from your own perspective. A lot of times it can guide us, it can help us reframe something that's going on in our lives, it can steer us in a great direction. So it's very important to be open to that ability. And when you do have that moment of recognizing that you have received a clairaudient thought, honor it. And follow it, and it's never anything scary or dark. It's always done with love and support. A lot of people think clairaudience might mean like you hear a booming voice, outside of you and like the physical, and that's not what it is at all. It's this inner thought voice that will come to you.
It comes from behind me on the right whenever
That's so interesting. Some people have told me that it comes above from the left. Some people say it comes behind from the right. This is the beautiful thing. Recognizing it is everything. And recognizing how you individually receive your information is such a beautiful journey. So I love so much that not only have you recognized you've had that experience, but that you know how it feels to you and where it arrives to you at. I love that.
Yeah, sometimes there's a breeze that comes right before, or like a pause, and that it's just a very much like over the shoulder. Yeah, it's a very specific feeling when it comes.
That's so wonderful that you recognize that. A lot of times when people have those clairaudient moments, it's so out of the norm and they don't know what to make of it. So they just honestly dismiss it or ignore it. So I absolutely love that. Not only are you aware, you've embraced it, you understand like the feeling that precedes it. That's wonderful. That means you've been opening and developing. I mean, that's what we should should all be doing. Because here's the truth. These are very real abilities. This is not woo-woo. You know, this is a very real thing, and it's a very real tool that can guide us all onto our highest path in the here and now. And when we get on our highest path, there's this beautiful ripple effect where we're helping this string of light of other people we're connected to on this earth that we're maybe not even aware of, but by finding our highest path, we're going to help them on their path as well. So, owning and honoring your psychic and intuitive abilities will not only help you shift your life into a more beautiful and meaningful existence, but it can help sometimes strangers you're never even going to meet just by the course of the energy you set in motion. So, the one you didn't ask about is claircognizant. I just want to mention that too. Claircognizance means clear knowing, and it's when you get this sudden download of information and you just know something in every ounce of your being. There's no logical way you could know it. And it can play, a role in small ways, like you're driving your normal route home one day and you get this absolute download knowing that you should go the long way home. And maybe you honor it and you read in the paper that there was a car accident or the road was closed or whatever that might be. Maybe you don't and you get a fender bender. You know, it's no matter what you choose, you're going to learn from it, right? But I think honoring our claircognizant knowings are really, really powerful. Sometimes they're about career choices. Sometimes they're about very big consequential life moments, about maybe moving or doing something. For me, I certainly am very open to my abilities, but what I'm very aware of with claircognizance is you can't force it. So a lot of times, if we have a question about what we should be doing on our path or our journey, we have to wait somewhat patiently for the answer. It's that sense of I'll know when I know. And you may have heard people say that phrase, and that's actually referring to this kind of claircognizant knowing. So I think it's so important and beautiful to honor that when we have those knowings. And then the one you asked about last was clairsentience, and that means clear feeling. That one I think a lot of us have without recognizing. It's basically this idea and this understanding that energy is all around us and that we have an ability to tune in and read that energy at all times. So, a lot of times it will play out where you might meet somebody for the first time. And yes, you're meeting them in the 3D and they might present a certain way, but you'll have a feeling about them as well. That's because you're reading their energy, you're reading their auric field, you're reading who they are on an energetic level, not how they're presenting on a physical level. A lot of times people too will recognize that they've had like a clairsentient read on something because they'll say, I don't know, I just had a gut feeling on it. And it's interesting too because we really read in our gut, like right around our belly button. So I think we use this language without realizing these are beautiful tools we're accessing. Clairsentience is also wonderful too, because when we travel new places, the act of traveling might be exhausting, planes, trains, automobiles. But when we get to a new place, we can read the patina of energy, both of the past, of the present, maybe even what's coming. And so we're very filled up by that. And certainly when we view art or we engage in art, we're reading the energy of all of that too. So being clairsentient can be a beautiful and magical thing that enriches your life and helps you know who to pull to, maybe who to avoid. I think sometimes it works against certain people if they don't understand it, and especially if they're very, very open. I always think of clairsentience like a volume switch, between a one and a 10. Some people are just programmed at a one, and some people are just automatically defaulting to a 10 at all times. And a lot of times we'll refer to those people as empaths because not only are they feeling energy, they're also going to experience other people's energy as if it's their own. This can get really confusing. And I find that a lot of times there are two kind of opportunities we have to really embrace and stay open to our psychic and intuitive abilities. The first is when we start formal schooling. So most children are super psychic, they're super intuitive. Before they have language, they're just reading energy. We start formal schooling and we start retraining our brain to stay in the frontal lobe. And most people will kind of turn their volume switch of their psychic and intuitive abilities all the way down to one at that time, but some will stay open. Even if you've closed it down, there's a resurgence that happens right around adolescence. So, right when the hormones start going, age 11 to 14, that's a whole nother doorway that opens where your volume switch suddenly goes from a one to a 10. And this can be really overwhelming for the teenage years, so to speak, where you're not only feeling energy, you're experiencing it as if it's your own. So I think we do a disservice in our society today when we just dismiss the word psychic and, intuitive and these terms of, clairsentience. We just dismiss them as, woo-woo thinking or not real, because they are real and they're affecting all of us. And wouldn't it be so much more helpful if we could understand what we're experiencing, maybe how to turn the volume switch down when the energy is not so great, but up when it is? I think we'd all live more beautiful and fluid lives here.
Well, it's interesting because I think, I mean, I'm personally really interested in raising the volume. I think most don't know how to do that, even if they are interested. When I meet people often, I kind of miss their name, even because I'm already feeling something and I'm paying attention to feeling, and then I'm forming, I'm getting some information, but it's still dull for me. But I'm aware that that's happening, so that's why like people are like, oh, do you know so and so? I'm like, I don't really catch names. Faces, yes, but not names. And I think that's kind of why. So how would one go about raising the volume to connect into these other parts of ourselves?
So this is really simple. A lot of times people think like, oh, I need to go to a psychic medium to get my answers, or to connect with, my ancestors or my loved ones on the other side, or my spirit guides or my team of light, or to get the information. That's not true at all. We all have these abilities, and it's a very, very simple thing that we need to do in order to embrace them and reopen to it. The first thing is to just declare that you're all in. I've come to understand that we all have a team of light on the other side, and it's three parts. It's God energy, which I see as this forest of light and goodness and love and connection that is part of us. We couldn't be separated from if we tried. We're all part of that, and we're guided by that. Also, I see that we all have what I call spirit guides. Throughout time and history, a lot of religions have referred to that as an angelic realm, guardian angels. I don't get stuck on the language. I use the word spirit guide because that's what feels, comfortable for me to use, but anybody could use any term they want. And we're guided by that team as well. And then we're also guided by any loved ones we have who's crossed, pets included. They guide us as well. I just don't call them, our spirit guides. I call them your loved ones on the other side. But the first step is just declaring yourself open to your team of light and saying, okay, I'm all in. I'm ready to own, honor, and embrace all my psychic intuitive abilities. I invite you to guide me. I welcome the information I'm going to get in using my own clairs, whether it's clairvoyant, clairsentient, claircognizant, clairaudient, whatever way the other side wants to communicate with us, whether they're going to send us signs to guide us, whether that's a numerical sign, or we ask for a creature, or a loved one on the other side sends something that we'd recognize as familiar to them. We're being guided all the time. So the first thing is just to declare ourselves open, and to give our team of light more encouragement and permission to communicate with us whenever they want. The second part, and this is the hardest part, is to get over the doubt. Because here's what's going to happen. You're going to have in your waking hours, and probably in your sleeping hours as well, but you're going to have these amazing moments of connection where you're either getting a sign or one of your clairs, lights up and you get information that way. And what is going to happen is you're going to get in a wrestling match with your monkey mind, because your monkey mind's on while you're awake the whole time. And so it's going to say, nope, that can't be real, because monkey mind's been taught we live in a materialistic world, right? The only things that are real are what you can see, touch, taste, feel, like all of that, right? And it's not the truth at all. I mean, if you really want to get into the science of it, and you want to look at quantum science, like we blew the materialistic paradigm of a world to smithereens decades ago, and we're still pretending that that's real, right? But we need to recognize that we're going to have a little problem there with our frontal lobe trying to reject anything spiritual that's come our way. And so it's very important to be aware that that's going to happen, but to still honor what you got. So it's getting over that doubt, right? And then I think a lot of people also have a great fear of their own abilities. They're like, I don't know. They almost feel like they're opening Pandora's box, or they're a little scared of what they might get. And
Or the
here's what I
negative
want to,
side might come through.
So here's the thing, like when you work with your team of light and you declare that, they're protecting you. You're on a very high light-filled spiritual level. So nothing negative can reach you then. It's just working through that fear of what is this going to be? What am I going to experience? So fear and doubt are really the two obstacles we need to overcome. So first is declaring it, and then fear and doubt. Now, what are some of the activities you can do to now really turn that volume switch up and really dive in? Well, you need to understand that you're already on like an independent study tutorial with your team of light, and they're going to guide you to the people, to the books, to the workshops, to the conversations, to maybe something you're going to see out on social media, maybe somebody you're going to run into randomly. You're going to be guided on your path into everything you're supposed to experience. Your job is to create space for it. Your job is to recognize when you've been sent something to help you develop and create space in your life and say yes to it. And to trust your intuitive pulls, to trust your own downloads, to trust all your clairs and what you're getting. And that's where the exercise comes in. The abilities I have are not exclusive to me in any way. People say, oh, what a gift. Well, we all have this gift. It just happens to be that maybe they come a little bit more easily to me. And maybe that's because what the scientists tell me, I know where that switch in my brain is to access the spiritual. Like I can turn it on and off in my waking hours, but we can all learn to do this. It's not something that just belongs to me. And I think that the more you exercise it, the better you get at it. It's also been researched that when you surround yourself with people who also share that same belief or are willing to explore it together, it expands so much more and so much more widely. And I think that's really a collective energy in this kind of unseen energy dynamic that forms and happens. For example, when people listen to this podcast, it forms a community of collective energy. It's like all these little points of light that come out. So just by engaging in this discussion together or listening to it or participating, even after the fact, by bringing your energy and your attention to it, you're opening yourself up wide. And that's a beautiful thing. So I think it's just recognizing that we all have the ability. We have to overcome fear and doubt, and we just have to exercise it. If I tried practicing the violin every day for the next year, I am not very talented at the violin, but by the end of the year, I'd probably be pretty good. Why is that? I've created space in my life for it. I've set the intention and I've done the work, right? So it's just a matter of opening your own energy and kind of declaring it. I always like to say to my team of light, use me as a vehicle of love and healing in this world, however I can best be used. Guide me. And I think that that really also helps program my energy to surrender in a way to understanding that we're always in this state of being guided in co-collaboration with the universe, and that our life journeys, our soul journeys here are intertwined with others that we can't really understand in a logical way, but we just need to surrender to and trust. And when that happens, you're going to find life becomes so much more beautiful and meaningful and magical, I'll add.
But you also said that I'm going to give Michael a chance to talk in a minute because you haven't said a word. But it kind of runs in your family, right? Your aunt, your mother, and then I think I read, and please correct me if I'm wrong, your children, right?
Yes.
Your three children also have this gift. And I think, is your husband a ghost chaser by night? I wanted to understand that. I was like, what's
Yeah,
going on
so
with this family?
let me give you a little quick synopsis of the background. And let me remind you that when people are collectively together and open to those ideas, everybody's going to develop and expand. So, yes, do I think there is a physiological component that makes abilities more pronounced or more easy to access in certain people? Yes. But in my own family lineage, it does come on my mom's side. My grandmother was very psychic and intuitive. She would have dreams that would come true, but it was usually the loudest when it was about, let's say, somebody going to be crossing from their physical body to the other side. So she would have dreams about people who were crossing as they were crossing, and this is back, rewind it like 100 years ago where we didn't have internet or really connections that way. And so she would announce it to the family only to find out later, like, yes, that's exactly when that person crossed. Same for my aunt, the way her abilities pronounced were like knowing that somebody had just died. Now, you can understand that in a family, that might be looked at as something a little dark, like, oh my gosh, how we shouldn't know that information, or why do we know that information? And here's the thing, too. A lot of times, things like someone crossing or something negative might come through very loudly. So we might And I do think we all do, most of us, suppress our psychic and intuitive abilities. Why? Because we've gotten the message that they're wrong, that they don't exist, or that they're dangerous, or we shouldn't explore it. So a lot of people's abilities get stunted right there, and then they don't talk about it. So with my mom growing up, my aunt knew that an uncle she didn't even know she had in Germany had just died, and the phone rang, and she's told my grandmother, "Oh, that's people from Germany saying Uncle so and so died," and she got slapped across the face. My grandmother answered the phone, and that's exactly what the message was. And my mom said, "We just didn't talk about it. Like, you were told you don't talk about this. You don't talk about these abilities." But when I had my own knowings at age 11 that my grandfather, who I loved so dearly, was going to cross, and then he did, I went to my mom. And that's the first time I found out that this ran in the family and that I was then part of this club I didn't know if I wanted to be in, right? But her approach to me was so loving and so beautiful. And I think it's the reason I'm here today doing what I'm doing, because I confessed to her. I said, "Mom, I think there's something really wrong with me. I think I'm cursed or broken or dark." I felt like so complicit with like the force that took him. I didn't understand it. I said, "I knew Pop-Up was going to die." And she looked at me and she said, "No part of you is cursed or broken or dark, Laura. Your soul's connected to his, and you just knew he was going to go on a journey, and it was your way of understanding that." And she said, "Every part of you is beautiful, and you shouldn't be afraid of it. You should embrace it." And I think that changed my entire understanding of my abilities. It made me feel like, oh, okay. And then she told me everybody in the family had had it, and she had it, and my aunt had had it. And like I said, I wasn't sure I wanted to be part of that club, and I wasn't sure what I was meant to do with it. But one thing I was sure of is that I trusted my mother. And if she was telling me that this part of me was just an additional ability I had to understand things and feel things and that it was beautiful, then I trusted it was. And I think that's what gave me permission to always stay open to it and to figure out how to use it as a tool to help and heal others, in a beautiful way that also like filled my heart with meaning and purpose and joy. But it definitely does run in families. Now, when it comes to my own children and my family, my husband is an attorney. He's a corporate attorney. And that uses very much the frontal lobe. My sister's the same thing, but she'll get stuff in the dream state. My husband, he's super psychic. He's the most psychic in the family. He doesn't open as much to mediumship or that stuff yet. Although I think he has the abilities, right? But he'll just know things. He'll know bizarre things. It's unbelievable. And when we'll say to him, like, "You are so psychic," he'll say, "Well, God told me." I'm like, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. My kids are all very, very psychic and mediumistic too. They all have different abilities. With my oldest daughter, she completely reads energy of all people, all things. And she would have like dreams, and she would know things, and she would see, like, she saw my dog that had crossed, like, by me one time in this really profound moment. My son has always had the knack for finding lost things. He just can feel the energy of where it is. As he's gotten older, he's 18 right now, he just gets very annoyed. Sometimes my friends will text me, like, "Can you please ask Caden where this is?" And he's like, "Mom, like, this takes a lot of, like," it doesn't take, like, I don't want to say it takes concentration. It's like almost the opposite. You almost have to release everything, but it's really exhausting. And he's like, "I'm not doing this anymore. Stop. Like, that takes a lot of focus for me." And my youngest daughter, she doesn't like to talk as much about her abilities, but she'll predict, like, 2 years ago, she predicted like who was going to win the Super Bowl and the exact scores of each team. She's predicted the crossings of like major world figures 2 years before and like sent herself an email. And then she's like, "Oh, look, I look." So she doesn't like to talk about it, but it's there. I think my children have the ability and they know they can use it as a tool, but they don't want it to define them, in that sense. And I honor that too. But I think it's beautiful because the conversations we'll have, let's say at the dinner table, are very different probably than more traditional conversations about how the world works and energy, or if something goes missing, how to find it, or like what the highest path is, or let's tune into this, or what are we all feeling? So it's really beautiful, I think, to embrace it. And they love what I do, and they like to take advantage of it. If we go out to dinner, they're like, "Mom, why don't you have two drinks and then tell me my future?" Because I don't like to do that usually, but there's a thing when you drink alcohol, if you have two drinks within a 90-minute period, it just flows like a waterfall for me. So they're kind of silly about it, but yeah.
Do you, okay, so then I'm really gonna let you speak, but your family like The Incredibles, and I want to come over for dinner. Those are my two things. Are you able to see for your family? Like, you can see people that close to you?
Here's the thing. Like, it's very hard to separate like my connections in the here and now to them, and like what I want to happen for them and what I would like write if I were writing the script or the novel of their lives versus the psychic and mediumistic and intuitive part, which comes through completely neutral, right? No emotion attached. That is why usually when I drink, it's like the front part just shuts down and it comes in easier. But like the other day, my oldest daughter is 24 now, and I was telling her all this information about something I saw happening, and I gave names and this, and she's like, "Mom, this is crazy because this person just reached out to me. That's his name. That's exactly what he does." So I was awake at that time, and she and I have always been really linked, but it was interesting because when she turned about like 14, she started blocking me. She used to come home from school and I'd be like, "Oh, do you have homework?" And she'd be like, "No." And I'd be like, "Actually, you have a social studies test tomorrow. And what is the 79 you just got on? Like math, like what is that?" So I'd give her a really hard time. And then as she turned about 14, all I realized, I can't see anyone. She would like block me. So I found it really interesting that now that she's 24, which is 10 years later, all of a sudden I'm back in her energy field and I'm able to start seeing this again. So I probably shouldn't be saying this out loud because if she sees this, she'll probably block me again in some way. But it's kind of neat.
No, actually, according to Kabbalah and ancient wisdom that we study, when a child reaches 12 or 13, they become responsible for their own soul, and they something shifts, and they're not as much under the parents' responsibility in that same way. And then, of course, there's different cycles. So it just sounds like your daughter went through that cycle. Now you're able to
Yeah. Oh,
access
I'd
and
love to learn more about that. That's so interesting. And that also tracks with what the other side showed me about like when we reopen or we have that doorway that reopens to our own psychic and intuitive abilities, it's that age bracket. They're right there too. So I almost think it's about taking ownership for our spiritual path and for our connections and our way of reading energy. That's
Yeah.
fascinating.
All right, you get a turn.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, actually, there's something that I found very interesting and I think important for our listeners. You speak about surrender and you tell the story with your daughter Ashley, and
Yeah.
then a long story. I'm not asking you to tell all of it necessarily, and I do recommend for our
Well, there's
listeners.
so many stories. There's like three I'm going to bring up later. I was crying in some parts of the book. I mean, really, like as if I had experienced it. Anyway, sorry.
No, sir, sorry. So if you can maybe share a little bit of your story with Ashley and
Yeah.
how that leads you to the importance of surrender.
Yeah, that was, here's what I'm very aware of. Like, we are here on all different levels for all different reasons. Some of us are here as teacher souls, some of us here as connector souls. And the beautiful part of that is we get to explore it and find out what our journey entails. And right at age 14, right there, Ashley, the one that I'm talking about, who's now 24, she started having all these symptoms, and the doctors couldn't figure out what it was at all. And my very first inclination and my download was, this is Lyme disease. And I went to the doctor and I was like, I think this is Lyme disease. And they're like, they tested her for Lyme, like the CDC test. And they're like, nope, she doesn't have all the bands. It's not Lyme disease. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And she just kept getting worse. Like, she had brain fog. She had anxiety, like through the roof. She had profound fatigue where we had to withdraw her from school, put her on home study. She could not function. And no doctors could give me answers. And finally, I had done everything I could. I had exhausted every avenue I felt I could. I had just taken her to I had researched about PANS and PANDAS, which basically those two terms talk about how a virus or an illness can cause the blood-brain barrier to be compromised, and that children, oftentimes, even in adults, this could happen too, but PANS and PANDAS is pediatric, so this is with children, can start showing neuropsychiatric issues, profound anxiety, anorexia, like all different things, OCD. Anyway, I'd taken her to this doctor. It was in Brooklyn, and so it was this really big drive for me, and we'd gotten home, and I just felt at my absolute lowest because I was at my wit's end, and I remember just feeling so raw and so empty, and getting down on my hands and knees in my bedroom and just saying to the other side, like saying this prayer of surrender, saying, it wasn't I give up, but it was like, I surrender. I'm not in control here. I've done everything I can. I need to be shown like help me. I turn it over to you. And I really did. It was this feeling of just releasing it, of knowing that I could do nothing more than I had. We had exhausted every avenue, and I just completely surrendered it to my team of light. And shortly after that, like, I got this download to read this handout that the doctor had given me. And in it, it had information about Bartonella, it's called, which will leave very distinct marks on a child. They almost look like stretch marks. And I had this absolute knowing, like, this is what she had. And I had taken her to the doctor for these marks on her back, 2 years prior. And the doctor was like, well, she was just at the beach. Maybe it's a jellyfish sting. And I'm like, well, when doctors didn't have the answer, they just dismissed it. So this article told me about that, which led me to this lab in North Carolina called Galaxy Diagnostic Labs that tests specifically for Bartonella. Again, CDC has certain tests that don't show up. Like, when I went to the doctor right away the next day and had her tested, and the doctor's like, no, she's negative for Bartonella. And I'm like, no, she's not. I know this is true. Sent it to this lab, and she lit up like a Christmas tree. I want to say, like, a positive Bartonella diagnosis, I'm going to make up these numbers, is like a 50. She had 500. And so she started treatment immediately for Bartonella, which is a gram-negative bacteria. A lot of people, it's called cat scratch disease too, because you can get it from, like, infected feral cats, which is why this lab exists, because it was a veterinarian whose father had gotten Bartonella from one of his rescue cats and almost died, because it can go to your heart. It can morph in all different ways. And it piggybacks with other diseases. So my daughter ended up having Bartonella and Lyme, and we had to treat for both. But it was really the other side who showed me that path and who gave me that claircognizant knowing, like absolute knowing, when that doctor was like, no, she doesn't have Lyme. No, she doesn't have Bartonella. It didn't matter what that doctor said at that point, because there was such a clear knowing in me that this is absolutely it. And I'm going to be led to the people who are going to give me these answers. And sure enough, that put her on this path to healing. And she started with one Lyme doctor in Connecticut, who started with the antibiotics, and then she hit kind of a wall. And I was led to another doctor in Morristown, New Jersey. Her name is Dr. Christine Gedrick, who understood the interaction of all things. And when we met with her, I think it was in October, she said, we're going to start treatment in November. She's going to be better by March. And I thought, this child's been sick for years. She hasn't been able to function, but I trust you. I know I've been led to you. And do you know that's exactly the timeline that happened? And it was all through changing her to a ketogenic diet. She was taking, I'm going to say, about 50 different supplements 4 times a day. Like, we went hardcore, and we went for treatment at her facility, where they would give her like glutathione, am I saying that right? All yeah. Different treatments. And they did colonics, because a lot of her like gut bacteria had to be healed too. But like clockwork. And the interesting thing was, I would get downloads about what was going on in her body and what was happening. And so with the doctor, so I would be saying, this is what I'm seeing. And she'd give me the clinical terms for it. Or she'd be like, well, that's this cell, or that's what this is. So we were able to figure out the treatment plan together, because I was seeing intuitively. She was very intuitive and could understand what that meant medically. And she healed so quickly. And I mean, she's still doing well. Like, she's actually in nursing school right now. She's decided to become a nurse because of what she's been through, and she wants to give back to others. And I love that. I feel like she's found her soul path. You know, it's very beautiful.
And you're saying surrender brought, even though obviously you've had these gifts even prior to Ashley's diagnosis, right? It was that act of surrender that you feel really opened you in a deeper way, right?
100%. If I hadn't done that, I would have been stuck in the frontal lobe in that mama bear mode of like, I've got to figure this out. I can't do this. Or in that mode of, well, doctors know way more than I do. Who am I to question that? I had to release it, surrender it, and then trust everything I was getting. And that changed the course of everything. I think if I hadn't surrendered that way, if I hadn't put it all in the other side's hands, it would have been like being walking somewhere rather than being on a jet. You know, it's that.
Yeah. I mean, I still, when you said, because as I'm hearing the story, and you said earlier, everybody can develop this. I mean, this is really profound. I mean, the download that you're able to get is profound, really.
But I think we're all able to get it, right? It just does involve surrender. Like, if yeah. you're stuck, if you're in a crisis in your life and you feel like you just can't figure out the answer, surrender it. But it has to be authentic. It can't be like, I surrender. Like, when I surrendered, it was so visceral for me. Like I could feel that energy being lifted from me. And I mean, I was weeping when I did it, you know, and I think it's important for us all to recognize in those moments that we will be carried. Like we're not sending that into the ethers and no one's listening. Like we are so loved. We are so protected and we are so guided. And our teams of light will show up for us and they will show us. We have to trust in that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I've had dreams that have come true and they didn't even make sense at the time. I've had glimpses of everything that you've talked about. It just feels dull, but I'm going to do what you said. I'm really curious to see how that unfolds. You did share in The Light Between Us that you were afraid of the gift. You had a dream about a TWA flight. And then also you had a dream about your friend, John Michello. Do you want to share that with our listeners?
Yeah, you know, that's what I was saying before about when it first comes through to you, a lot of the times, like the very jarring, alarming, what we would label as dark things will come through, like knowing someone's going to die, right? And that feels very confusing because you're like, what am I supposed to do with this information? And why would I know this? And it's very, very deeply upsetting. What I realized in retrospect, all those three things showed me. So knowing my grandfather was going to die, which was just a knowing, having a dream about the TWA flight that was going to crash, and dreaming about my friend John Monsello dying in the moments and hours he was dying and waking up as they found his body, I found out later. What that ultimately meant, it was the fact that we're all interconnected, right? You know, I don't know if you've ever seen Star Wars, like the original, but I remember, you know, a line from it where Obi-Wan Kenobi talks about feeling a disturbance in the Force, and it's right when a planet's been blown up. I honestly think like that makes so much sense. Like you could think of it like this force between all of us, right? That we can tap into and we can feel. And for whatever reason, whether it's physiological and ran in my family or I had just learned to practice it and be open to it, I was a wide open kind of vessel to receive information. What information would be the loudest was the most tragic or the most upsetting, right? So it would start with me knowing that people were going to die. What was the purpose of me knowing everybody on that flight was going to die and feeling that? I think it was to honor our connections, their souls, and understanding that their souls were going on a journey. In the same way that ultimately knowing my grandfather was going to cross was my soul sensing his soul was about to go on a journey back home to the other side. And that I was so connected to John. We're connected to people also who we love in whatever way or have been part of our journeys, right? That I could sense his soul was going on a journey. And I think his soul was saying goodbye. And I was the one who was open and able to listen because number one, I was in the dream state. But number two, I was also just physiologically, you know, my brain is very good at being open to that, or I had already started developing it. So all those things were actually a gift, and a gift honoring the light between all of us and the connections between all of us. But did it scare me? Yeah, because the question I had was, what does this mean? Like, why would I know these things if I can't undo it or stop it, right? And I've come to understand in time that it's really just about love and connection and honoring. We're not meant to always be able to stop something, but our souls know one another, you know, in a different unseen energy way. And so I think once I understood that, it helped me greatly on my journey, understand how I could use these abilities to help others see their path or see their connections and to know that it's always all about love.
Well, you then put that to your gift to really help families. I mean, many, many people all over the world, but with the Forever Family Foundation and some of those stories, so moving, but the story of, I guess, the founders, right? Bob and Fran
Ginsburg,
their daughter, yeah. Bailey, is it?
Yes.
So, and then you told a story in your other book, Signs, about how that little boy who crossed over. That, I mean, just profound. Do you want to share a little bit with us about that and what, because it's science-based, right? The Forever Family Foundation?
Forever Family Foundation is a wonderful organization. Anybody listening should consider joining. Membership is completely free. They're a not-for-profit. And they were founded because Bob and Fran Ginsburg physically lost their daughter, Bailey, when she was 16. She was in a car accident and crossed. And they were going to support groups. And all the parents were talking in the parking lot afterwards about like the incredible signs they were getting from their kids and like dreams they were having of their kids and like how they understood like their kids were still present just in another way and they weren't allowed to talk about it in the place. And Fran and Bob, wanted to create a safe space for people in grief, and a lot of grieving parents too. That was my focus when I was, first started out in Forever Family too. I do workshops with grieving parents. That was always very important in my heart. Any medium who's part of Forever Family Foundation has been tested by them, and that test is pretty intense. So it's like this blinded test where you're reading a sitter. The sitter can't say a word back other than sometimes yes or no, but they score you for accuracy. And if you pass the test, the beautiful thing about Forever Family Foundation is any medium that does anything for them never gets paid. Like it's completely volunteer, And so if we're doing an event or we're traveling to a grief retreat or we're doing that, that's just on our own time. And it's because that's our soul mission. That's what we're doing. But I think it also is very comforting for anybody who goes to one of those things or is at an event to understand like the mediums are in the right, their heart's in the right place. And so, I think this is like so disturbing that this field isn't regulated. Anybody can hang up a con Fran used to say anybody can hang up a shingle and say they're a psychic medium. And there's something very intimate that happens like when you read somebody's energy. And can you imagine like a parent in grief going to somebody who's just like trying to exploit them and make stuff up or be like, it's awful, right? And so they
Sometimes when I
created.
walk down New York City and they have like not so much after COVID, but like people must be like, oh, and I feel their energy and I walk faster. I'm like, I will never go in your, you can kind of sense it. But you shared a story how when you were going, you were driving to the first event you were doing for this foundation, you were nervous and you were at a stoplight, I believe. And all of a sudden, all these children came to you, right? You heard all the voices, and it was the children of the parents you were going to meet, like you're driving to meet, and they were already coming to you to give the messages over.
Yeah, that was really powerful for me. It was one of the first like big intimate events I did. It was 10 groups of parents, and I understand like the sacredness of this, right? And the responsibility I had to really work as best as they possibly could to bring their children through. But I was going to it thinking like, oh my gosh, like if I'm not this conduit and I don't bring this through, like they could end up in worse grief than they are now. And I really felt very like overwhelmed, and I got to the stoplight and they all arrived for me. And it was their the children letting me know, like I wasn't walking in there alone. I was walking, they were already with me. And it just changed everything for me. When I walked into that room, I knew they were already with me. And I knew I had been guided into doing this event and being with their parents. And it was so sacred and so healing. And this is the thing, whenever I read, I'm also a student, I'm getting to meet people on the other side, but I'm also hearing all their messages of love, and I'm hearing how they reframe things about maybe their purpose here on life and why they needed to cross when they did, or the connections that go on, or how they see things now that maybe they saw differently when they were here on Earth. And I'm constantly learning, and what I'm learning is what's the highest and best way to live here on Earth, what we're here for. And I quickly learned it's just to love and be loved, and that forgiveness, kindness, gratitude, love, that's our true currency. So if you're diving into those things rather than fear and anger and bitterness and all those things, like if you're diving into gratitude, forgiveness, love, like you're living your highest path. That's always the answer.
I
And it's
heard
really helped
something
me.
about some of the children, some of the messages that they gave their parents was because we meet with a lot of people and we counsel a lot of people. And of course, the death of a child, like, can paralyze people for the rest of their lives. But some of the children came back and said, I was only supposed to be in this physical body or on this physical plane for a very short time to receive unconditional love. And you did that for me, right? That's
A
kind of the message
hundred
that you gave.
percent. That is the message. There's never any like, there's no bitterness of the children on the other side. They're always just full of love and gratitude. And the messages have always been like, I chose you to be my mom and I chose you to be my dad. And I want to thank you so much because I know you don't remember this, but before we all came here, your soul loved my soul so much that you knew you'd only have this amount of time with me. But you said, I'll take any time I can get and I will help you learn your lessons in love. And you agreed to this. And I'm so thankful, and those relationships. They don't dissipate, they get stronger. And those children are still vibrant parts of the families here. They watch over, they give all sorts of information. They're there for every sad moment, every happy moment. A lot of times too, when I read psychically, it's my job to like reach out and see what I see and interpret it and like figure stuff out. And I'll be working with somebody's spirit guides because they'll always be on that left-hand side for me. But the information I trust undeniably is the mediumship, because I just sit back and they give it to me, and it's really not anything I need to interpret. I'm told, so I'll share it, and they'll a lot of times they'll talk about like children that are going to be born in the family, or like exciting stuff that's going to come up, or whatever it might be. They're still so present every moment with us, and I think any time that we direct our thoughts to anybody we love on the other side, they always hear us. Anytime they talk to me a lot about this, anytime we do something here honoring their light, either way, if it's out loud or not, like let's say we do a walk in their honor, they're there with us and they're thrilled because that connection is so profound and their energy and influence is still bringing about beauty in this world. But let's say we quietly go to an ice cream parlor and we just say, here's, $50 for the next people that come in, just, buy ice cream on them. But we're doing it with the intention of honoring, let's say, our dad on the other side or whatever that might be. It's doing the same thing. We don't have to like necessarily name a building after a person to have them be so vibrant and so excited, because when we honor their presence and their ongoing presence in our lives in whatever way we do, they know we know that they're still right there and they get to be part of that with us. So I think that's such a beautiful thing. And that's something I've learned from the other side too.
It's so interesting because my youngest daughter and I just wrote our second children's book. It's called The Tale of the Other Glove, and it's about the power of empathy. But on our podcast, we had somebody write in who is a student of Kabbalah, and she was talking about her son Ben, because we kept saying the name Ben a few times in the previous episodes randomly, like Dr. Ben, whatever, or just when she, and then the message that third podcast or second podcast was exactly what she needed to hear. I think it was about grief and loss. And we
Wow.
said the word Ben again. So she wrote about her son, Ben, who committed suicide, I think when he was 21. So I don't know. The thought came to me, and again, it wasn't my thought, right? I'm not going to take credit of like, oh, I'm a good person. But the thought came to me that Ben should be a character in the book and be my daughter Abigail's friend, and that we'd bring him back to life. And so I asked his mother for his picture so it could show his likeness in the book at age 7. So now Ben is brought back to life through this book. And so I sent her the book, and she said that, first of all, she didn't realize that he'd be such a big character in the book as Abigail's best friend, and that it brought him back to life. And then she had a dream about him that night, and she was really, really missing him, like more than usual. And she was kind of in pain about it again. And he came to her, and she felt it like physically, and she felt it in the dream. And he told her that he's okay and he's still with her and alive. And like she really connected it. That through the book, that it's exactly what we were talking about,
Yeah.
that circuitry and how they are always around. I find it interesting too, and I want your opinion on this, but in terms of time, right? Because some of the stories that you share in your book also, this is a profound one. I want to get her name right, but she lost her father to suicide 30 years before, Joanne. And he came through a reading. And I thought the timeline was interesting. Like, why 30 years after, right? Because he had committed suicide. She was in pain about that. And then the message with the kitten. Do you want to tell that story? Because that one got me crying too. But I
Yeah.
also, so it's a two-parter. The story brings healing at any stage, and I think that's a profound part of what you do. But also, how does time play into souls when they leave? Because we believe in reincarnation. So if a soul leaves, and let's say the soul comes back in a body, then how does the soul remain around the family it had been in, let's say?
Okay, so there's a lot of things I
I
want
know,
to
I
unpack
know.
here.
So
This is such
sorry.
like I'm so excited to be in conversation with both of you about this. The first thing I want to say is I just want to address one thing. One thing I've found consistent is when people cross through suicide, they are very invested on the other side with helping their loved ones here heal. And so the first thing I want to say about the Ben story you just shared is like they have a plan and they can see who to connect. And I think like because you're open and your daughter's open, like Ben could see to come to you to create this connection of what was going to unfold. I love that. And that was all part of him helping his mom heal and bringing that together, but also bringing light to the world, right? So there's that beautiful part. Okay. The story from from the book about Joanne and the fact that her father came through 30 years later. Here's the thing, time here is linear, but I want you to think about it like a canvas. Like, you know, if you unrolled like a really long thing of paper and it just kept going, and that was going to be the time that your soul was going to be here this lifetime, right? You, if you're standing right in front of it, are only going to see a little section. But I want you to think about, and this is how the other side has showed it to me, and they'll always give me ways that will help me understand it to explain it to other people. They said, think about a helicopter looking at traffic and saying, oh, this is what's down here. This is what's coming. We have a really good view of it because we're up high, right? So there's a little bit of an element of that, whereas the other side, that's our true home. And I'm going to tell you everything I've learned. What they tell me is that our soul is always really there. Our incarnations here in this linear time are all happening all at once. Time is happening. Everything's all at once. So my brain's already in a pretzel, right? How can that make sense? I'm trying to understand that. And they laugh at me a little bit and say, like, listen, we're trying to explain it to you, but this is like you trying to explain algebra to your dog. Like, you're just not going to be able to fully understand it, but all time is happening at once. We're really always on the other side. So we're never separate from each other, from energy, from all things. Think of it like almost like this virtual reality that we're beamed into. And then we're in these physical bodies right now where we feel separate. We're never separate, right? But we might feel isolated. We might feel separate. I was not raised with the belief in reincarnation, but I very quickly, from the readings I've done, began to understand, like, oh, that's a truth. Earth is a school, and our souls come back in soul groups. And sometimes we're learning lessons within that group, or we've come as a group to help others learn something in a way. And sometimes the families we're born into, we have maybe like soul contracts. Let's say you're born into a family that's really chaotic and difficult. Well, you're probably the more evolved soul who spiritually contracted to help that group of souls, but your soul tribe might be outside your family. And so it's your friends that you're going to meet along the way that are your true soul family. So to speak, there's all different equations, right? And all different things. I find a lot of the research that has been going on and has come out of University of Virginia's consciousness lab is really fascinating. Ian Stevenson had done a lot of research, and then Jim Tucker took over. So I always encourage people, like, get Jim's books, look into that. And it's a lot about past life recall of children. Because I think, too, in this world, like, we're always looking, like, what's the angle? How could that be? And, like, let's say, like, an adult's talking about a past life. Well, how do you trust that? Or how do you know that? But with kids, if they're remembering it, like, you know, why would they make that up? And so much of it is verifiable. And typically, like a child will remember only until about age 4 or 5 and then have no memory of it at all, which also tracks with the fact that we get stuck in the monkey mind frontal lobe. And so all our understanding or our memories that kind of bleed through, if you will, from that, like, you know, not being blocked by the filter of our brain, it starts getting blocked more fully and we don't remember. But yeah, so from my understanding is that most times we will choose to wait to reincarnate in at least, let's say, 70 years or more. Every now and then that goes awry and it's faster. And I think those are some of the times that there are children with past life recall. It's almost like what they've showed me is this brain we have, you know, which we're like, oh, consciousness comes from the brain. No, it does not at all. And even the scientific community will say, like, they'll throw their hands up, like, we don't understand this. We don't understand where consciousness comes from. We're trying to understand it, but we don't. But like the theory that it comes from our brain, so not true. The other side has shown me your brain's like the dunce cap filter that keeps us from remembering our true homes on the other side. We're all connected. We've had other lifetimes. Because also think about it. If you remembered everything from your last lifetime, you'd be going back to find all those people in your lifetime now. And maybe, like, you know, your cousin from one life is now your friend from another. You're like, oh, hey, like, you'd be still working that out. And so I think there's a reason we're not allowed to always remember, but there is soul recognition that'll happen. And I'm sure this has happened for most people where you'll just meet somebody and you feel like you know them. Like, I know you, but I don't know how I know you, but I know you. And not only do I know you, like, I love you, or we're meant to be like in each other's lives in some capacity. And I don't understand it, but I'm going to surrender to it and follow it. So that happens too. You know, I do think that there is a sense of like waiting a certain amount of linear time before we come back into this virtual reality. However, I'm also aware that everything's all at once. Now, quantum physics is really interesting to dive into and look at, right? Because I'm always interested in the science. I work a lot with scientists. I do my own research all the time. And there are some wonderful organizations that, your viewership could dive into too. There's an organization called The Rhine in Durham, North Carolina, that was founded in the 1930s by J.B. Rhine and like really started looking at, it was like founded on Duke University. And it looks into like psychic abilities, unseen energy, remote healing, fascinating things, right? So this research is going on. I already told you about UVA is doing that too. Jim Tucker, Ed Kelly is doing research into unseen energy. There's just great scientists doing this, right? But I think that from my understanding, we wait a little bit and come back into this linear kind of virtual reality so that A, enough time has passed where if we have soul contracts with the same groups, we're all there and we come back together. We do things in a different way. And what quantum physics will show is that we all know that the past affects the future, but what has been proved unequivocally in the last 5 years or so is that the future affects the past. Which is mind-boggling. They've done this, of course, by looking and observing light. And when light has to pass through like a lens of some sort or a substance, whether it goes as a wave or a beam. And if it's not observed, it can go like both or whatever they want. If it's observed, it has to choose a way. And I'm doing a very bad job explaining this, but I encourage your viewers. It's called retrocausal theory. So research it, look into it. It's fascinating. It's hard to kind of grasp the understanding, but what it means is that things we do now affect the past, which is a message I've gotten from the other side is that we can heal the past by what we do now and what we bring into the future, which again, a little bit of a mind bend, but I trust in the messaging. And so I think that our thoughts matter more than we know. Collective consciousness matters more than it we know. Being in a state of prayer, whatever that might mean to somebody, doesn't have to be in a religious sense either, but it has to be with this understanding and awareness that you're part of something greater than yourself and there's a greater force that connects all of us, right? Being part of that's amazing. I don't know if you have you guys heard of the random number generators that are placed throughout the world?
No, what is that?
Okay, that's another fascinating experiment that's going on. So, they're basically computers, right, that are just spitting out series of numbers. Now, in science, what we look at is something called cohesiveness to prove like there is anomalies that are not fitting into the chaos that it should be, right? So, if you have a computer spitting out numbers, they should all be random, just random, random, random. And that's what happens almost all of the time. But before really like powerful, impactful, and oftentimes negative, because remember, I said the negative events are usually the loudest, even though they're not necessarily the most powerful. It's the loving ones that are really powerful, right? But right before events like 9/11, before, do you remember that horrible tsunami that happened Christmas Day, right?
Right.
Like years ago. Before these events, all of a sudden, these random number generators, about a few hours to 24 hours before, that are just spitting out random streams of numbers, start to show cohesiveness. And what that means is it starts to show patterns, some sort of pattern of it's not random anymore. It's showing streams of numbers in a certain pattern, and then a huge world event happens. What does that mean? It means that there's a collective consciousness. There's this like internet of energy, right? Unseen energy that we are all tapped into, whether we know it or not. And that through our thoughts, we have the ability to affect electrical devices, and that will reflect our collective energy together. And so it's showing that we know something's about to happen. We might not logically know what it is, but we know it. And it's also showing we're all interconnected. It's fascinating. There's a great book by a writer named Lynn McTaggart. It's called The Intention Experiment. I recommend this to everybody because she's a journalist who researched the last 100 years of basically energy work that's gone on in the world. It's fascinating. And one of the things that she delves into in chapter three is that there's a language between all beings of light. We all give off biophotons, and this has been measured in labs. This is some of the work that the Rhine does, for example. They'll take healers into like a darkened room with super sensitive cameras that can perceive light that the human eye can't. And when healers start sending energy, they will like glow brighter. Like we all glow in the dark, and there's a language between all things of light energy. And the other side's also shown me like when we leave our physical bodies, That's our light. We are light energy. We are streams of light behaving in a cohesive way. That's what our soul is made of light. That's what I've been taught.
Yeah, this is aligned with everything we teach. Kabbalah says exactly the same thing. I wanted to bring up another point. Did you want to say
that? I was going to say, actually, have you heard of Dr. Ellen Langer?
No,
she's a professor at Harvard. She's
we had her on our podcast recently. She's really interesting.
Oh, I'm gonna listen.
So one of her, just because she reminded me,
mind body unity.
Yeah, mind body unity. But she writes about the fact that they've done studies where if you have a group of people meditating in a room, and then they leave, and then you bring another group into that room, they will have more positive thoughts and negative thoughts that they would have had otherwise, just by the energy created in that room.
Oh, 100%.
Prior
That's
to.
Fascinating. Yeah. And spaces hold energy 100%. And I'll feel it. And other people will feel it too. I do a weekend workshop every year, usually in September, at a place called Omega Institute. Have you guys heard of it? Okay.
Sure.
That campus, it's like infused with the most incredible, like open, light-filled thought energy. And when I go there, like magical things happen in these workshops between like the people. They find lifelong friends and like just these connections that happen. And it doesn't surprise me because I walk into this room, it's this great room that I teach in, and I feel the patina and the energy of like all the other teachers that have been there, all the other workshops that have taken place. So I am so excited to read about her research because it totally aligns with everything I'm feeling and experiencing.
And conversely, if you go into a room where not great things happen.
Yes.
We stayed at a friend's house and it was a couple I was working with and they were really fighting all the time. And I mean, all the time. And anyway, they were out of town. They said, come stay, you know, stay in our bedroom, whatever. We never fought like that in our lives. After the second night, I said, we're getting out of here. Like now.
That's real. Yeah.
We literally walked out of the house and we were fine. I'm like, what were we even arguing about? It wasn't even our energy. It was like something upon us came to be.
Yeah. But it's so true.
So the two stories that really stood out also in terms of healing, and I think that often people have such regret when they lose their loved ones, if they didn't have closure or if things were left unsaid or forgiveness never occurred. I lost my father 3 years ago and we lost his mother, 5 years ago now? And she was like a mother mentor to me. So as well. So, and my grandmother 2 months ago. And so with this experience of death, the intuition's kind of been heightened more for sure. And also
yes.
When you witness death and you see a soul leave a body, you know, you just, a knowing happens, as you say, if you're paying attention. And again, I think if you're open. So I think I can speak for both of us. We've been definitely changed through those experiences and feel very fortunate that with his mother, nothing was left unsaid before she left. And it taught me how to help my father transition. And so I was able to tell him things that I don't even know how I knew and what he would see when he got there and give him like solace and peace. And it's really like one of my, sorry.
Oh no, take your, this is so beautiful and it's so important. And I think sharing this with others, I think we have this fear of death in this society and we should be talking about it. We should be talking about these things.
Yeah, I've been talking about it a lot. One of my kids is like, Mom, I think you've been talking about weight. I mean, it started to get lighter at the beginning, though. It was a little bit, not dark, but just real.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
But that transition, helping him transition was like one of the best memories and experiences I've had with him in this lifetime, you know? And sometimes I think maybe that was a big part of why I was his daughter and I was able to see past lives with him. And, but anyway, so there was nothing left unsaid, but these two stories that you shared and that you can still have closure even with souls after they've left, I thought was really profound. So she talked about Tony and his father. And it's just, I mean, I don't know. It made me cry a lot. I have a really soft spot for children. I could have like a dozen. I just love, they're just so pure. And but he was, you know, he went to Boy Scouts, right? And he was given the task of creating a belt that he was going to give to his father. And he was super proud and he carved it and he put the little holes in it. And he had like some kind of design. And then when he came home from Boy Scout, he went straight up to his room to continue working on the belt. And he forgot to take out the trash. And his father became very angry. It's not the first time. It's not the second time. It was probably many times. Came running into the room. He forgot to take that trash out. And yelling at his son. And then he took that belt and hit him with it. And the boy, Tony, never gave the father the belt. And so his father came back through you to say that he got the belt and that he didn't know and that he's so sorry. I just thought that was so profound, right? And this Tony was a non-believer on top of it, right?
Yeah, yes, yes. That story taught me so much, that connection, right? And I remember when I was doing the audio for the book and reading it, I started weeping. You know, it still makes me cry. And I can put myself right back there doing that reading and remembering what that was like to bring that messaging through me. Because I think sometimes, like, we have these core moments in our life path that other people not aware of. But, you know, Tony's father, when he was here, he didn't even know the meaning of that belt. You know, he came and he saw it, and he whipped him with it and left. And Tony never told him he was making it, never did it, but he like held that in his heart as this really sad moment. And when his dad transitioned to the other side, one of the things we all do is we have this life review, which really just means like we understand all the ways we've been connected to all people and how we made them feel and what lessons were there. And we'll be shown if we missed something or, and so he was coming back to say, I'm so sorry, I didn't know that. And I'm coming, he was coming back to strengthen their relationship, to heal that wound, to say, thank you. And I was wrong to be that enraged about the garbage. And I was wrong to hit you with that belt. And I see now what you were doing for me. And I'm so sorry I left you with that wound all your life. You know, and Tony, this tough guy, just broke down weeping on the phone. And he was saying to me, tell him I love him and it's okay. And I was like, you don't need me. He hears you. You know, I'm the third wheel here. That's another thing I want people to know. Like, if there's anybody listening who has unresolved, you know, feelings, issues with somebody who crossed on the other side, anytime we either ask for forgiveness or forgiveness is giving, it's like received 100%. Relationships can heal completely. And I think our loved ones are always looking to send us signs that they're around, right? And get our attention. So anybody who's listening, if you have something unresolved with somebody, ask them for a sign that they understand it now and that you two are good and you're healed. You know, it could be anything you want. It could be a number sequence like 1111, or maybe a birthday that's important. It could be a creature. It could be, you know, but I would say make it different. Don't just ask for an elephant, ask for a purple elephant, you know, ask for a song, ask for a phrase, and they'll send things too that they're known for. But those relationships and that healing continues. And a lot of times when people hear we're maybe stuck in like a limited belief or weren't able to see something, the moment they transition and cross, they see it differently now. And so those old wounds can be healed and progress can be made and that relationship can heal and grow in beautiful ways. You know, so many times, like I'll see that, you know, maybe a sitter here has a stronger relationship with their loved one on the other side than they did when that loved one was here, because so much has developed since. You know, it's very powerful and beautiful to have, like, be part of that or witness that conversation or that energy exchange that goes on.
Exactly. And then the other story, we talked about Joanna earlier and her father who committed suicide 30 years earlier, but the rest of that story, which really that got me crying too. So she was, I think, how old was she? Maybe 7 or?
So I should have told the rest of the story. So one of the things he came through with was he was trying to heal her wounds too. Right. And he brought up that when she was a little girl, he wanted her to know that he just kept saying, the kitten's okay, the kitten's okay. Please like let that go and heal from it. And she was just, you know, she broke down and she's like, I haven't ever told anybody the story, Laura, but when I was little, you know, we had this little kitten, a family kitten, and I had heard that kittens always land on their feet, so I thought it would be really fun to test that. And she lived in kind of a higher rise apartment, so she dropped the kitten off the balcony just to see it land on its feet, and it died. And she never admitted to anybody she had done it, but she was like haunted by this her whole life, like, oh my god, I'm a horrible person because I did this. And here was her dad coming through saying, like, it's okay. I'm the kitten's with me in this place of love. Please forgive yourself. You didn't know. Don't carry that anymore. It's not serving you. And I think that was really the most beautiful thing he could have done, because yes, he came through to say, I'm so sorry I left. I'm so sorry you experienced that, you know, but, and I've been learning so much from you, but how you're living your life, and I'm here for it all. But like to give her that gift back of like self-forgiveness for something she'd been carrying and not like letting come to the surface because she was so ashamed or upset or felt like it had made her, you know, marked her as a bad person, to release that. What a beautiful gift that is. And that's exactly right what parents should do for us. So it's very loving.
Beautiful. Well, I want to thank, I mean, I think our listeners will have a lot of both insights, but like you said, I think maybe the most important idea is that they can develop these abilities themselves. So
100%. And
I
what's
love
more,
that.
they can develop a language with their
Right,
team
the
of light on the
secret
other side.
co-create the
100%.
secret language, exactly.
Right. Because we live in the materialistic world. We want tangible signs. And I'm like, they can do that too. Just be open to it. Watch what happens. It's magical.
I have one last question for you. It's a
Yeah.
personal one. Has this your experiences and in what you do, has it changed your attachment to physicality? Like, are you afraid of death? Are you afraid of losing your loved ones? Or has that made you kind of immune to it? I'm curious.
You know, it's so interesting because I always felt like, okay, how will this change my relationship to grief? And how will this change my relationship with my own mortality and all of that? So, to answer a couple things, when my father crossed, I thought this is going to be interesting to see like what my grief journey is like. Is this going to help me at all? And I can't even, I mean, I wrote about it in my book. Like, it changed everything for me. Like, my relationship was so much stronger with him. The signs were so profound. They were undeniable. And like, my whole family would share like what we were getting simultaneously. Like, it really brought us together and was healing and so loving and proved to me like how much being open to this idea helped me on my grief journey. That was the first part. The second part about my own like mortality. I know what I'm getting is real. I know the other side is real. Am I afraid to transition? No. What I was afraid of for many years, and to some degree still, is like when my children were very young, I thought if I were to transition now, I'm sad for them. I'm sad for their sense of loss, of physical loss of me and all of that. And I think that probably is still true to some degree. You know, now they're older. My youngest is 16, my middle is 18, and my oldest is 24. So they're more evolved and more on their path. But I would love to be present to support them and be here for all of that. I'm also very aware of the duality of my own life. And I mean that in two ways. Like, there's always this sense of me being here as like Laura with my family. And I'm not exempt from my own trials and tribulations and lessons. And if somebody cuts me off in traffic, how am I going to choose to react to that? And how am I going to navigate things when doors don't open immediately in my life and I'm getting a download like you can't know yet? Like, how do I work that through, right? Versus like the work I'm doing in the world and what I'm sharing about the other side's messages is duality. And there's also a duality for me every single day of being here in this materialistic world, but always being connected to the other side that never ends for me. Like, I'm always open to my own guides, and I'm always being guided. And sometimes I forget to ask them. Like, I'll be stuck in something like very materialistic, tangible, frustrating. And I'm like, oh, wait, what's the perspective they're going to give me on this? And it'll change everything. And I'll be like, oh, that now I understand. Now I understand the lesson or the journey, or that I'm part of somebody else's lesson, or this is part of my lesson, whatever it might be. It helps me completely. So I don't have a fear of death, perhaps in the traditional sense, but I am very, very aware that the people who I'm connected to this lifetime, who are my children, my husband, like all of that, they are navigating this materialistic world, and I would love to be present for as long as I can to help them in any way I can. You know, there's that.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
So where can people find you, and is there anything you want to mention that you're working on or anything
You know, I
in
always
processing?
feel like the best part of this journey are the people I meet along the way. So it's like beautiful to be in conversation with the two of you today. I feel really honored by that connection. I always welcome people who are guided into my energy field. I am a teacher at heart. You know, I taught high school English for 20 years, and I was really teaching about the soul when I was doing that through literature, like the choices we make and our connections to one another. And then I transitioned into this. But my guides have made it very clear that I'm a teacher. And so, what I love to do is teach people how to open their own abilities to this and show them that they don't need me. You know, I'm kind of the anti-business model. I'm like, nobody needs a psychic medium. You can do this, or you can start this language, or you can change your own life through your thought energy in this. So, one of the things I love doing is teaching workshops, and I always will post that on my website, which is just simply lauralynjackson.com. I post a lot on Instagram where I'm by the same name there. I have a workshop coming up usually in September at Omega. I have one. I'm going to be in Florida in October, and then I'll be posting more things. But yeah, I always just encourage the viewership to just stay open and aware about like, the people, the ideas, the books, the information that their team of light are constantly bringing to them. You know, it's our job to recognize it and then be open to it, because it's always part of our highest path journey and connections to come. So, yeah.
When you talk to people, like you talk to us, are you getting messages all the time, or do you have to ask?
That's such a great question. So the psychic part never closes. The mediumship is closed like Fort Knox vault. And there's a dual part reason for that. Like the psychic stuff, I don't think I could turn off if I tried. And quite frankly, it's helpful to me. And if I'm connected with somebody whose energy I really like, it's not like I would never want to turn it off. So you guys have beautiful, like open, expansive light energy. Like I turn the volume switch all the way up. The mediumship, it stays shut unless I'm actively scheduled to do a reading. And one of the reasons for that is, and I don't know how other mediums work, because some other mediums, I don't even understand how often they read. Like to me, it is completely depleting. It is like taking an SAT while running a 5K. And so I am so careful about how I spend my energy. And I'll only do between like usually about 1 to 3 readings a week, right? And it's very scheduled for me. And then it's like I have time off and then time to recharge and that. So for the most part, if I'm not scheduled to do a reading, that door, it just stays completely shut. Every now and then, do I get bleed throughs? Can I sense things? Yes. And I tend to just share them when they happen. I call that the VIP line. Like if my guides are bringing them through, then I trust that, you know? So it's like that. But do I always have a sense of people around you and with you? Yeah. It's kind of like I can see, you know how you'd see in your peripheral, but you wouldn't maybe like then zoom in and have that whole conversation. Like I can see that, you know? So I can see the cords of connection between you guys and people in the here and now and what you're doing. And those are just like a, you know, a switchboard. It's crazy. And then your loved ones on the other side, I can see that too. And I think there are like two pets there for you guys too. You know, it's like, I see just like a whole group. So yeah, no, they're definitely there. It's, there's not anybody who doesn't have like a team of light connected to them at all times. You know, it's just a matter of like deep diving in. It would be like looking at a really deep swimming pool that's really clear and being able to see what's at the bottom. But in order to like read, I'd need to dive in and retrieve it from the bottom and hold my breath the whole time. So it's a very different experience. You know, as I started like embracing my abilities and I had to confess to my principal, I'm sure you read this, so you know, like that I do this, she started finding me in between classes and she'd be like, come read the secretary. And I got so physically sick. I got the flu and then I got pertussis, like whooping cough. Like who even gets that? And I missed 3 months of work. And my guides at the end, and I was really sick, like scary sick, when you feel like you're not going to get better. I couldn't breathe. Like it was, and I didn't get diagnosed with pertussis when I should have. So I got so sick from it. And at the end, my guides just very matter-of-factly said to me, you needed to learn this lesson. Wow. You're in a physical body. These are your limitations. You are not to read like that anymore. And it was right before like my first book was going to come. And they really taught me like I need to have boundaries and be very respectful of the physical body I'm in. You know, I'm part of Winbridge, which is a research, scientific research group that researches mediums. There's 19 of us. And I am one of the few of the 19 who either doesn't have like an autoimmune disease or cancer and multiple bouts of cancer. And my download is because I think most mediums don't understand what's going on and that they can't do this. So I am so sacred with my own energy and I'm so careful about it because honestly, my guides really scared me. Like when I was that sick, like, you know, and sometimes I'll just get sick from big world events. You know, if something really negative has gone on, I'll get physically ill from it too. So it's like, I'm always connected to that stream. So I've learned to be really, really careful for the most part, the answer is I can see them there. They're with you. I won't purposely like dive in and connect unless I've allotted time, I'm scheduled, that sort of thing. And so I think that's been a real hard thing initially for me to come to terms with, because I've always been like, I want to read everybody, like da-da-da. But my download from my guides was like, no, you're meant to teach this. And so when I do, let's say, my Omega weekend workshop, I don't read at all. I'm teaching people how to connect. I will do very targeted gallery readings for 2 hours, spaced out maybe for a year, where I'm like reaching anybody and everybody I can in that space. And it'll usually be a smaller group, anywhere from like 100 to maybe 300 at most, right? And I'm just trying to rapidly get to as many people as I can. And I trust that my guides will lead me to whoever was meant to get that reading, but that we're all there holding sacred space for each other and part of each other's, witnessing somebody's space is sacred. And I've also seen, when I've done gallery readings like that, I've seen like streams and streams of like lines of everybody's loved ones on the other side, and then they part and they'll let one person walk through. Like, they'll do that a lot for children. They'll all hold space and create like a path for a child to come through. It's very interesting.
Well,
Yeah.
thank
you. Well, you are a gift. It's been a pleasure, really, such a pleasure talking to you today.
And like I said, I'm sure our listeners will gain a lot from it. So really, we appreciate you taking the time and sharing with us and all of our listeners.
Thank you so much for, first of all, creating this space. And then I feel so honored to go into it with the two of you. You both have such beautiful energy. Which one of you is the artist? There's so much like orange energy here.
Artists, I don't
Yeah.
know.
Is that
Yeah,
you?
more of the creative.
Yeah. You're meant to like dive into that more and more and more. Yeah. It's really beautiful.
Gotta shut off the
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been such an honor. And you guys are doing a lot of amazing light work in this world. That's very apparent to me.
Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Appreciate it.
I might book a session with you, by the way.
I don't think you take sessions.
No,
Just
I
take
might. I'll wait here, but
All right. Bye,
definitely.
guys.
Bye.